Joe DiMeo from SNY, co-host of Mets Pod, does a great job analyzing prospects. Joe, welcome back to the program.
Laurie, appreciate you having me. And something I want to point out that is really starting, the shift is changing in Major League Baseball. You're seeing these draft picks, especially the college ones, get to the major leagues quicker than ever before. And, you know, some of them are really high-end examples, right? Like Paul Skenes,
right,
almost immediately made it to the major leagues. But like Jack Caglione, who's going to be in the Home Run Derby tomorrow night, was very quickly brought to the major leagues. Carson Bench for the Mets, he had one full minor league season, and he makes the opening day roster with the team. So you're seeing more and more teams being more aggressive with prospects than maybe they were even as recent as 5 years ago.
All right. Well, then that makes it even more interesting, potentially, that the Yankees and Mets both, of course. Let's dive into both teams and the draft. And we'll start with the Mets. And give us an overview of, how would you characterize the Mets' overall strategy and approach? I'll tell you that, certainly, if you only followed the draft on social media, there did seem to be a, you know, it seemed like there were reaches, or that the Mets were drafting players that were not necessarily the consensus analysts' picks at certain spots. But I also know some of that has to do with, you know, the slot money and how you're playing some of those things. But how would you characterize the overall strategic approach of the Mets draft?
Oh, trust me, I saw everything on Twitter because I get tagged in it all. And look, I mean this as no disrespect to anyone that does public rankings, because I personally do public rankings. I rank the Mets top 30 prospects for SNY, so I'm a part of this world. But I think we should not confuse public rankings with necessarily what the industry ultimately thinks of these players.
Okay.
And where it all comes down to is Carson Wiggins, who is the Mets first round pick out of Arkansas. They took him at number 27 overall. If you were to go on MLB Pipeline, they had him as the 88th best player in the class. If you went to Baseball America, I believe they had him as the 109th best player in the class. But when I was talking to scouts throughout baseball, outside of the Mets organization, because I do my best to not ask the Mets, because guess what? The Mets love every draft pick that they made, naturally. So talking to other scouts, they said, look, we thought this guy was going to go in the top 40 to 50 picks. So if you want to say maybe a slight reach, I could go with that. But I don't think the Mets drafted someone that, if they didn't take him at 27, he would have been available at 92, you know, their third-round pick, which ended up being their next pick. I think he's a guy that sat 99 miles an hour with his fastball, touched 102, wipeout slider that generated a 74% whiff rate in 2025 for Arkansas, because Carson Wiggins did not pitch in 2026 as he underwent Tommy John surgery with an internal brace. However, he's fully healthy now. He threw at the MLB draft combine last month in Arizona, and he was up to 97 miles an hour there, not going full bore in a bullpen session, but clearly just showing that he was healthy. So the Mets believe they're getting a current healthy player with excellent stuff that, had he not gotten injured, Carson Wiggins has the kind of stuff that could fit in the top 10 or 15 of a draft. It's elite stuff. Just a matter of harnessing it and throwing more strikes, because walks are a big part of his game. So it's a job for the Mets player development. It is a little bit of a project, but I was told by one scout, 102 with a wipeout slider do not grow on trees.
We see it with Jacob Mizorowski and others. Like, if you have, you know, 102 is 102 miles an hour. So Carson, yes, Wiggins is the first name. Mets first round draft pick. And then the other interesting thing I noticed about Carson Wiggins, as you point out, because he has been injured, he did not pitch this year for Arizona. So usually what happens with, you know, or oftentimes what happens with some of these players that have had a full, let's say, college season workload, at this point they get shut down and don't even pitch for the, you know, major league team in the minors, you know, in somewhere in the system, because you want to rest a guy who's already had a full season. Because Carson Wiggins, the Mets' first overall draft pick, has not pitched this year in college ball, sat out, you know, recovering, is there a chance he slides right in and the Mets, you know, he pitches in the minor leagues this year?
I'd say it remains to be seen, but I could tell you Carson Wiggins did his introductory conference call, and he said, "My rehab is over. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go pitch somewhere tomorrow." So he's antsy to get back on the mound. I'm not sure if the Mets will play it easy and just bring him down to Port St. Lucie, develop him, maybe get a couple innings down in, you know, either rookie ball or low A just to get him on a mound. But I think what the Mets are going to focus on here with Carson Wiggins is get him into their pitching lab with their player development staff and figure out how you could turn a guy with two elite pitches, feel for a really nice curveball that's just not consistent, and he's also learning a changeup. How can you turn that into a starter's workload and also potentially improve the command so he can be a starter long-term?
If I said to you, what's your favorite pick of from the Mets draft, who's your favorite? Who's your favorite pick?
I have favorite picks for some different reasons. I'll say from a value perspective, getting Texas outfielder Aiden Robbins at number 92 overall.
Yep.
He's a guy that was getting first round buzz the entire draft process. And he was a guy that was linked to the Mets at number 27, actually. So if you want to do the public rankings thing, Lori, if Mets fans want to feel better about this, just say they took Aiden Robbins at 27 because he was ranked in the late 20s on these sites, and say they took Carson Wiggins at 92, and then it all kind of lines up. But Robbins is a guy that the Mets were surprised that he made it to 92. They thought if they didn't take him at 27, he might go shortly thereafter, but he ended up falling. And he's an interesting case of a guy that in college was a tale of two different players. His first 2 years, he was at Seton Hall, and he was a hit over power guy, hit over 400 his sophomore year there, hit only 12 home runs in his 2 years at Seton Hall. He then proceeds to go to the Cape Cod League, where he ended up leading the Cape Cod League in batting average, slugging percentage, and OPS, and that's with a wood bat. So that's a league that's really big for scouts. And he transfers to Texas, obviously big SEC school, and he doubles his career home run output with 24 at Texas and becomes more of a power over hit profile instead, adding some more swing and miss. But it's a guy that punishes fastballs. He was asked for a scouting report on himself. He refused to give it, but he did say, "Throw me a heater and see what happens." So he needs some work on recognizing breaking pitches, and I think his defensive home in the outfield is a little unclear. Might be a left field profile, but getting him at 92, I thought that was an excellent value pick. And if you want to just take a shot in the dark, in the 11th round, they drafted outfielder Cujillo Aloy, also from Arkansas. So the Mets actually drafted three players from Arkansas: Carson Wiggins, Aloy, and then they also drafted Cooper DeSette, right-handed pitcher, in the 17th round. But Aloy is the younger brother of Wihaiwa Aloy, who was the 31st overall pick last year for the Baltimore Orioles, went to the same college. Aloy has stupid raw power. In a game this year against Ole Miss, he took an upstairs 97-mile-an-hour fastball to left field, 117 miles an hour off the bat, and 469 feet. So there's a lot of swing and miss in his game, but you can't teach that type of power. And the Mets being able to pluck him in the 11th round, I thought, was also really good value. And on a personal note, in his bio on Arkansas's website, it said that he can hit a golf ball 400 yards, and I got quite jealous when I read that.
Yeah, I'm happy with, 200, but...
Yeah.
And then before we pivot to the Yankees, who's a name that if Mets fans want to say, you mentioned, you know, players are getting to the big leagues faster, is there a name on this list? And I don't know if is that a relief pitcher? Is that, you know, who's a name on this list that you would look at and say, Mets fans, this could be somebody who could come help the team sooner rather than later?
I'd look at the fourth in the fourth round. They drafted a left-hand pitcher, Shane Sadeo from Texas A&M. This is a guy that had a huge 2024 season at Texas A&M, and there was a thought in the 2025 class, he had a chance to be a first-round pick or an early second-round pick. He undergoes Tommy John surgery, so misses 2025, comes back in 2026. The performance wasn't really there statistically, but you could see his stuff trending back to normal as the season wore on. It's a guy who really pounds the strike zone. Unlike Wiggins, whose command really needs work, Sadeo is a strike thrower. The fastball is up to 97 miles an hour. He's got a really good slider, curveball, changeup, and the Mets believe there's some more physical projection in there. He's listed at 6'2", 185 pounds. They think he could be adding maybe 10 pounds of muscle, which could add some velocity. And if that's the case, I think Sadeo is a high probability starting pitcher that has a chance, I think, to cruise through the low minors. And if you do that and you get to the upper minors pretty quickly, you put yourself on the radar, especially as a starting pitcher.
We're talking to Joe DiMeo from SNY about MLB draft, the Major League Baseball draft this weekend. And so let's flip to the Yankees. And so for our listeners who are Yankee fans, and well, we'll get into some a little bit of big picture there. Certainly, I think Yankee fans want to hear about the player that was drafted in the eighth round. And if they haven't paid attention to this yet, the Yankees went ahead and drafted Andy Pettitte's son, Luke Pettitte. Tell Yankee fans about Luke Pettitte. Give us the scouting report on Andy Pettitte's son.
Yeah, look, I love the bloodlines. Every year when rankings start to come out and I start to really dive into this, I'm always looking for the children or relatives of former big leaguers. And Landon Tomey was pick in the top 40 to the White Sox. Barry Bonds' nephew, who goes to Rutgers, was drafted by the Giants. Trot Nixon's son got drafted. Lyle Overbay's son got drafted. CeCe Sabathia's son got drafted really late. But Luke Pettitte, another one of those, he's at Dallas Baptist, a right-handed pitcher, so not like his dad, so didn't quite get the lefty gene. It's not like the biggest stuff in the world, but it's a really good slider. It's a low 90s fastball. I'll touch 94, maybe 95. But he injured his elbow in 25, had Tommy John, missed all of 2026, but he's a two-way player. And Dallas Baptist had him as a DH. He hit .337 with 16 home runs in 42 games as just the DH. The Yankees announced him as a two-way player. I think his future's probably on the mound, but I'll be interested to see how the Yankees ship him out there as he's, you know, finishing his recovery from Tommy John. But obviously a super cool story. You know, Luke Pettitte, I think he's a legitimate draft prospect, and they're putting up at a better team for him to end up with, obviously, than the Yankees.
And then if I ask you the same question I asked about the Mets before, sort of big picture, how would you characterize the Yankees draft? Is this, what's the overall strategic approach? Was there, an emphasis on college players versus high school upside? Or how do you, hitters, pitchers, how do you look at the Yankees draft big picture?
They had more of a mix than the Mets did. They drafted more high school players than the Mets did. Mets actually drafted two. Yankees had a few more, especially one up high. Sean Duncan, who they took in the second round out of Canada, high school kid, that his stuff was really ticking up this spring. He was getting up into the mid-90s and getting some real draft helium. And he was a guy that a lot of people thought the Yankees would look at with their first pick at number 35 overall, which we'll get into that pick here in a minute. But Duncan was a guy the Yankees, I know for a fact, were all over this spring. And he underwent Tommy John surgery this spring, so he might actually end up missing all of next season too. But this is a highly talented lefty, like I said, that's up to the mid-90s when he's right, and a raw kid out of Canada that I think the Yankees are really excited to get into their system. But in the first round, The Yankees also went to Arkansas, so maybe the Mets and Yankee scouts had lunch together and stuff at Arkansas because both of them used their first-round pick on Arkansas pitchers. Hunter Deets, I love Hunter Deets. If you told me, like, I would rather the Mets have taken Hunter Deets than Carson Wiggins, but the Yankees are the beneficiary of Deets. And one of the things when you talk about pitchers that have injury history and things like that, in my job, I'm just scouting what I see. It's not my job. Like, if these guys are, if things are going to happen, I'm not getting fired for liking a guy. Mm-hmm. So Hunter Deets, his first 2 years, he only got into 1 2/3 innings. He had a stress fracture in his elbow that required surgery, but he came back in 2026 healthy and was excellent for Arkansas, posting a 3.57 ERA in 85 2/3 innings. He was third in the SEC with 131 strikeouts. He's a big lefty. 6'6", 235, like a true starting pitcher build, up to 98 miles an hour on the fastball, a really, really good slider that gets a ton of swing and misses. I think it's a high upside starter that projects as a mid-rotation kind of guy, probably, maybe even a tick better, depending on where his command goes. It got better as the year went on, and scouts I talked to said, you know, it's probably average to maybe a tick above average if things continue to develop from a command standpoint. But Deets is the kind of guy that I think Yankee fans are going to get pretty excited about pretty quickly.
Yeah, and Yankee fans can dream on a rotation that has Cam Schlittler anchoring it with an imagine a, you know, righty and then a lefty, a horse like Hunter Deets in it, and that combination seems quite formidable. All right, so that's, you know, giving people some of the flavor and a few of the names in the draft for Yankees and Mets fans to focus on, to think about. Joe, let's turn to, you also are a co-host of Mets Pod. And, you know, as we look at the Mets hitting the All-Star break today, and especially from a prospect perspective, which is something you focus on so much. So Zach Thornton obviously pitched today, 7 innings, highly efficient. Should have had a win, but of course the Mets managed to ruin what should have been a great day. But for Mets fans, this was only his third start in the major leagues. Highly positive, but what parts of what you saw today is can Mets fans hope or think might be sustainable for Zach Thornton as a major leaguer?
I think efficiency is always been his calling card. That goes back to, I remember when the Mets drafted him out of Grand Canyon University in the 5th round, and that was his calling card when he's come out of college. If you watch Zach Thorne, he's not blowing you away with stuff. Like we were talking about Hunter Deets touching 98 miles an hour, Carson Wiggins touching 102 miles an hour. Zach Thornton, you might get 95, maybe, but that's going to be even a rare occurrence. But this is, I guess, maybe a little bit more of an old school guy. There's not really plus pitches in his repertoire, but he just controls everything. He knows where everything's going. He pounds the strike zone, but he also has command within the strike zone. So it's not just that he throws strikes. He throws good strikes as well. So I think you can count on this efficiency, this throwing strikes, putting the ball where he wants to. And I think he's probably a back-end starter going forward. But look, considering what we've seen starting games for the Mets this year, the level of inconsistency that there's been. And when you watch Freddy Peralta, and like you said, we'll get into the trade deadline. When you watch him at times struggle to get through 4 innings, let alone 5,
yeah.
Zach Thorne is a breath of fresh air when he comes out. And, you know, I wasn't avidly watching the Mets game. It was background for the draft for me. Mm-hmm. So I was a little busy today, but yeah. I certainly am keeping an eye on things. He had what? 60-some pitches through 6 innings.
Yeah,
so,
he had king
of efficiency.
39, I think it was 39 pitches through 4 innings. I had it in my notes. It was, it was a sight to behold. He really was efficient through 7 innings today. The other thing when it comes to young players wanted to get your take on is in the last couple of days we saw the Cardinals lock up their great young player, J.J. Weatherholt, 8 years, $112.5 million contract. We haven't seen the Mets you know, this is something, that approach that we haven't necessarily seen the Mets do. But now here we are with A.J. Ewing and Carson Benj on the roster. Anything that you're either hearing or when you think of David Stearns or Steve Cohen and the expected approach, would you expect the Mets to, as a lot of teams have, to lock up either of those players with a long-term contract?
I'd love it. I haven't heard certainly that that's something that they're talking about or thinking about. I think they might have other things on their mind right now because the trade deadline is just 3 weeks away. But I'd love to do it. The one pushback that I've gotten in talking to Mets people about this, not these specific players, but the concept in general, because the last time I think the Mets did this was John Neese, Juan Lagares, whoever was more recent of that. I think those were the last time that they did this early in career long-term extension thing. And the pushback that I've gotten is with the money that ownership has, they don't necessarily need to do it. They could just let the player's career play out. Like, how about, for an example, this was something they said that was said to me, and I'm a big fan of Francisco Alvarez. But if the Mets gave Francisco Alvarez a huge deal after his rookie year where he hit 25 home runs,
right,
I think a lot of people might be complaining about that contract. So I think the Mets are willing to let these guys play. And if they're really awesome and they warrant a long-term deal down the road, they have an owner that can afford to give it to them. So I don't think it's on the forefront of their mind, but I'll tell you, I've brought it up to them, and I would love to see one of those contracts for a Ewing or a Benj. More often than not, for these type of extensions, you're seeing that from smaller market teams that almost need to take the risk now, mm-hmm, because let's use the Cardinals as an example. If J.J. Weatherholt continues on the trajectory that he is, like, he looks like a slam dunk NL Rookie of the Year, and if he's awesome going forward, he's going to price himself out of St. Louis's range. So you pay him now, take the risk, but it could pay big dividends down the road for them.
Yep, we're seeing it more and more. All right, before I let you go on the trade deadline, to me, the most interesting question on the deadline, I think we know or would expect that the guys who are pending free agents, maybe Clay Holmes is in a separate category where maybe they do an extension with him, a new deal, but otherwise, the Luke Raleys, the Brooks Raleys, or AJ Minter, you know, guys like that, we expect maybe traded. That would make a lot of sense. The one that's interesting to me is, what would it take for you to trade Luke Weaver, and do you expect them to trade him, knowing that he has another year of control?
First off, Clay Holmes, I've been very public about this. I said it on the Mets pod. I think I say it every week just to make sure it's out there for 3 weeks in a row, that the Mets should extend Clay Holmes and not trade him. They should work that out now, tomorrow, whatever, as soon as they can.
Yep.
However, if they can't, then you have to trade Clay Holmes at the deadline. You can't just have him pitch here the second half and then opt out and become a free agent. You have to trade him if he can't get a deal done. But I would try very hard. And I brought it up to Will Salmon, who was a guest co-host on the Mets pod, as Connor Rogers is out due to the birth of his child. So Will was on, and the next day, Will does reporting that he talked to Clay Holmes. So I like to think I got the ball. I got the ball rolling there.
There you go.
Yeah, I did the best I could. But like you said, Brooks Raley, AJ Minter, Freddy Peralta, the free agents to be, those are the ones that are going to go. Luke Weaver, I think right now where the Mets stand, and it pains me because I love Luke Weaver. He fits in New York. You're going to need a bulk in 2027. But with especially the way the Boston Red Sox are playing, coming in, sweeping the Mets, and the streak that they're on and putting themselves right in contention, Luke Weaver legitimately might be the best available reliever at the deadline.
Yeah, now that Aroldis Chapman is probably not being traded.
Exactly.
It was looking like he would. But right now, if Chapman's not, you're absolutely right. Where is there a better relief pitcher right now that could be traded and is not just a rental, has control next year, and has also shown that he can pitch, if you can pitch with the Yankees and have success there, I don't think teams are worried that you can't handle the bright lights.
Nope. And pitch with the Mets. Like, the Yankees are the bright lights. The Mets are a bright light in a different way because everybody is magnifying on every mistake they make. But Weaver's also pitching at a level he will never, ever, ever, ever pitch at again. So you can't not give up runs ever, right? And that's what Luke Weaver has done.
What should Mets fans be looking at? You know, we all remember, you know, you mentioned Chapman. We all remember the Cubs, the year they won the World Series. They gave up Gleyber Torres, who at the time famously was a top prospect for, you know, and that was for a rental in Aroldis Chapman. It was worth it. They won the World Series. What should Mets, I mean, are we looking at a top 100 prospect? Are we looking at a top 50 prospect? Or what kind of player should the Mets fans expect in return?
I'm looking at two things. Either A, I got to get a top 50 prospect at least in a deal if I'm training for a minor leaguer.
Yep.
But I'm also interested, I don't have a name for you here. Yep. It's definitely not Luis Castillo in Seattle, who somehow the Mariners are floating as a prize. But last deadline, the Twins traded Griffin Jacks, who was a reliever then, now starting for Tampa Bay, to Tampa.
Yeah,
he's doing great. And they trade Griffin Jacks for Taj Bradley, a controllable, major league ready starting pitcher. Mm-hmm. So if I'm floating Luke Weaver, I'm saying I either need a young, controllable, big league ready starting pitcher or a top 50 prospect plus something. Mm-hmm. And the benefit that the Mets have, as you mentioned, there's one more year of control with Luke Weaver. If they don't get what they want, they can just keep him because he could be a factor for them in 2027. So I would set a high, firm price. And if someone meets it, which I think someone probably would, given the need for relievers at all times in the second half and heading into the playoffs. But I think I would just set that price. And if someone matches it, great. Thank you, Luke Weaver. And the Mets will just have to add a new reliever in the offseason. And if not, then Luke Weaver gets to stay with the Mets. And I think it's, in a way, a no-lose situation for them.
All right. Joe DiMeo from SNY, co-host Mets Pod. Joe, appreciate the time. We'll catch up with you soon.
Of course, Lori. Anytime. Talk to you soon.